Welcome in Thursday edition, Outkick the Coverage. Frank Isola swings by, as well as John McClain from the Houston Chronicle. Lots of discussion about the AFC and the NFC title game, all that and more. Enjoy, dive in, and we'll get ready for hopefully what's going to be some really fun football games over the weekend. I'm out in L.A., a little bit of a zoo, but the podcast should be up flawlessly. Enjoy.
Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis, live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern. 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
As we move closer and closer to the AFC and the NFC championship game, my head is spinning. I'm out in L.A. now. I started the week down in New Orleans, and I'm going to eventually be back in Nashville to watch Sunday as the Titans go up against the Chiefs and the Packers go up on the road against the 49ers. And as we start kind of inching towards that game, we'll talk a lot about today. We'll talk a lot about it tomorrow, kind of giving you a roadmap of everything as we kind of get ready for Thursday and Friday in advance of the big games on Sunday. One of the things I like to think about is who has the most at stake, right? And I might come at this a little bit from a different perspective than others, but I think about the championship and pursuing an AFC or an NFC championship and a Super Bowl based on how often are you going to find yourself there. And when I look at these teams right now, I think the Titans have way more at stake in this game than the Chiefs do. Let me explain why. The Chiefs were in the AFC championship game last year. They came within a D-Ford lining up on sides correctly from being in the Super Bowl last year against the Rams. It's hard to get to the Super Bowl for most teams, but Patrick Mahomes is not like most quarterbacks. I'm not saying he's going to Tom Brady it and play in 9 Super Bowls in his career, but I do believe that he is going to be in many of them in the next decade, right? Like, it would stun me if you gave me, let's say, the next 12 years, and if the Chiefs weren't going to be in at least 3 Super Bowls in the next 12 years, that would very much surprise me. And 3 might be low, right? They're certainly going to be in the AFC playoffs almost every year, I believe. That's just how good Patrick Mahomes is. So I think they are almost always going to be there. The Titans, I just don't know how often they're going to be in this situation. It's been 17 years since they were in an AFC championship game, and even with the run that they have made right now, do you know where the Titans are for next year's Super Bowl odds? 50-1. Right now, even sitting in the AFC championship game, one game away from making the Super Bowl and playing for it, according to the most recent odds that were put out, I'm counting right now, the Titans, by the way, Kansas City Chiefs right now are the favorite to win the Super Bowl next year, which goes to my point about them being in the mix kind of every year. The Baltimore Ravens are at 8-1. The San Francisco 49ers are at 8-1. Green Bay is down at 20-1, right? So if you count there, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, the other 3 teams that are in the mix to potentially win the Super Bowl in the Final Four here are all top 8 contenders for next year to win the Super Bowl. The Titans are 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. The 23rd most likely team, according to oddsmakers, to win the Super Bowl next year. Now, that can be considered a bad number. You might be like, I'll take the Titans at 50-1. But ultimately, everything is a function of probability and likelihood that you are going to find yourself on that doorstep again. And right now, the Titans, by far, I believe, have the most at stake, if you believe those odds makers, because the likelihood that they will find themselves back in a position such as this in the next year or even the next couple of years is relatively low, according to odds makers. Whereas the Kansas City Chiefs, while, yes, you don't want to lose back-to-back AFC championship games, with Patrick Mahomes, so long as he stays healthy, you're going to be knocking on the door for championships for years to come. Same thing according to oddsmakers with the San Francisco 49ers, who are the favorite to represent the NFC again next year. And as long as Aaron Rodgers is there, then I think he can be considered a contender alongside the Packers as well. So I think that the Titans have by far the most at stake. Now, you could spin it another way. You could say, well, Andy Reid's never done it. Patrick Mahomes has never done it. When are the Chiefs going to finally knock down the door? I'm not concerned about Patrick Mahomes winning a Super Bowl. Yes, if he loses this game, some people will say, when is Patrick Mahomes ever going to get it done? He's won multiple playoff games already now. He's been in two straight AFC championship games. He's going to get it done. Titans, not sure they'll be back here anytime soon. So if you're a Kansas City Chiefs fan, you should take pity on me. Go ahead, be kind, let us go to the Super Bowl, because we may never ever get to do that again. I'm 40. It's possible I die before the Titans get back to the Super Bowl. Second most at stake, I believe, is Aaron Rodgers. Because there's a big difference between winning a Super Bowl and becoming a multiple Super Bowl winner. Brett Favre never won more than one Super Bowl. Winning a Super Bowl is hard. Huge difference between winning one and winning none. But there is also a really, really substantial difference between being a multiple Super Bowl winner, which very few men ever get a chance to do, and being a guy who wins one. Aaron Rodgers, given how dominant he's been in the league, feels like a guy who should have multiple Super Bowls. Going 2-2 in Super Bowls for Peyton Manning made him, I think, right behind Tom Brady as the best of all time. And I still wonder, if you really want to have fun arguments, what would Peyton Manning have been capable of if he had had the opportunity to play for somebody who's as good of a coach as Bill Belichick is? So as I rank most at stake here in the AFC and the NFC, Titans most at stake, because I'm not sure they're going to be back here again. Even though Titan fans should be excited to be here, it's hard to get to the AFC or the NFC championship game, even harder to get to the Super Bowl. You have to win a lot of tough games. I'm not sure the Titans are going to be back. So I put the Titans at the most at stake. In the second spot, I would put the Packers, because I'm not sure how many more years Aaron Rodgers and the Packers are going to have to contend for Super Bowls. And then in the third spot, I would put the San Francisco 49ers, because Jimmy G, to me, still hasn't proven himself. Jimmy Garoppolo, yes, he's in the NFC Championship game, but I still have questions about where exactly he ranks in the sort of larger context of NFL quarterbacks. I'm not convinced that he's top, top tier, whereas I'm convinced that Patrick Mahomes really is the best quarterback in the NFL right now in when you consider age and talent and longevity. I don't think there's any doubt that if you could draft every quarterback in the NFL right now, that Patrick Mahomes would be the first pick. I don't think there's hardly any team out there that would turn down Patrick Mahomes. Yeah, even the Ravens. Even the Ravens and Greg Roman, who designed an offense built around Lamar Jackson, I think they would prefer to have for the next decade Patrick Mahomes over Lamar Jackson. That's how good I think Patrick Mahomes is. So in my ranking of most at stake, I think clearly number one is the Tennessee Titans, number two, Green Bay Packers, number three, the 49ers, and number four, the Chiefs, because again, that's basically the reverse order in which I think the likelihood is that they will contend for Super Bowls going forward. Jason Martin in with me today. J-Mart, you agree or disagree with my ranking of the stakes and the orders in terms of what people have at risk?
It's interesting the way you did it, Clay, because when you first said it, I had a different list. I had it from a different perspective, but then I thought about the terminology that you used, and that changed kind of how I classified this. Now, technically, the Titans are tied for 20th with the Raiders, Broncos, and Jaguars. The list,
that ain't good, regardless.
Yeah, it's not good. They have the 10th worst odds because there's a lot of ties here. But
right.
Still not very good.
50-1 is not a very high percentage chance.
No, it is not. And usually there's about there's between a 40 and 60% turnover of playoff teams from year to year. It's been closer in the 50 to 55% in terms of teams that made it one year, did not make it the next. And of course, you see the Super Bowl hangover and things of that nature, and you're seeing it right now. You're seeing teams that didn't make the postseason that are still playing currently. I think there is a difference between stakes and pressure. because I think the pressure is all on the Chiefs, not on the Titans. I agree, though, the way that you laid your case out, that they have the most stakes because they are less likely historically and just based on the fact of who they are and how far they've made it and how fortunate they have kind of been in some of these games. It's going to be harder for them to get back. There are a lot of question marks. We don't know who the quarterback's going to be. We don't know who's getting paid, who's getting shipped out of town. And while that's true for a lot of other teams, the Titans were not supposed to be here. But there are huge stakes as well for Kansas City, at least as it relates to Andy Reid and the way that he continually gets perceived at how he performs in the playoffs. We've seen him in one Super Bowl. We saw him lose to the Patriots when he was with Philadelphia. And since that point, he's kind of been a punching bag in the postseason, both for the media and for the teams that have played against the Kansas City Chiefs. I agree beyond belief with you about Mahomes being the face of the league. I think everybody would take him number one because they have eyes. And we've seen what he does, and it's not something that's an aberration. It's not something that's going away. He just has unbelievable talent, otherworldly kind of talent. And I agree with you about Jimmy G. And I've said that all season long. The thing that I don't really like about the 49ers, they have an all-world defense, and they have a good running game, and they have outstanding schemes from their head coach and Kyle Shanahan. But I don't like Jimmy Garoppolo as some kind of – I don't even think he's a top 15 quarterback right now in the NFL. So that would worry me. So I think, again, I was thinking of pressure when you first asked the question. But now I look at it and I think, you know what? I agree, because the Titans getting back is a less likely scenario because nobody expected them to be here right now.
Yeah, and again, I think the overall pressure, I think you're correct in that the sort of the national response if the Chiefs lose will be, oh, look at Andy Reid, look at the Chiefs. But they're going to be back there, just like they were back when they lost to the Patriots. Now, I'm not saying they're going to be in the AFC Championship every year, but when you get in the playoffs, the way I think about it is, it's a lot like being a high seed in the NCAA tournament. If you consistently put yourself in as a high seed in the NCAA tournament, eventually things break your way, right? You have to win six games to win the NCAA tournament. If you're a one or a two or a three seed and you consistently put yourself in there, will you be upset sometimes? Yeah. Is there going to be a team that comes out of nowhere and beats you and you think, man, we were better than them, but for 60 minutes they got us? Yes, but if you consistently put yourself in the playoffs, sooner or later things break your way and you get a good bracket, you get a good run, get a couple of bounces that maybe you didn't anticipate, and it all kind of evens itself out. And so I believe Patrick Mahomes is not just going to win a Super Bowl. I think he will win multiple Super Bowls. Now, there's also the fear, and I think this is what Lamar Jackson has to guard against a little bit, J-Mart, which I think you'll kind of understand and think about too, is in the back of your mind, do you start thinking, oh no, here we go again, I can't ever win? Do your teammates start thinking it like Marlon Humphrey said, hey, we get to the postseason and we choke? I think that becomes the fear, but losing in the AFC Championship game or losing in the Super Bowl, by and large, doesn't, in my opinion, mean that you're not going to get back there if you have a guy of the talent of Patrick Mahomes. We come back, we'll ask this question to Frank Isola, see what he thinks.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Joined now by Frank Isola at The Frank Isola. You can find him on Twitter. You can follow him there. You can watch him on Around the Horn and also oftentimes on PTI. You can listen to him on Sirius XM, and you can read him at The Athletic. Frank, how blown away are you? I know it's been a couple of days now, but the ongoing baseball scandal, I wanted to start with you there because I know, you know, in New York, baseball, the Red Sox rivalry and everything else, and you can hear in the background there, the city of New York never sleeps indeed. What do you make of this? How much attention is it getting in New York as a scandal-related story?
Well, it's a huge story because you look at 2017 and 18, that's the Astros knocking out the Yankees and the Red Sox, and both of them go on to win the World Series. You know, Clay, there are certain times when I always say this, if only George Steinbrenner were still alive,
he would absolutely
be losing his mind right now. To think about what he'd be saying, what the commissioner's office should do. I know that a bunch of the Dodgers have come out and said stuff where they feel like they've been cheated. I'm sure George Steinbrenner would do the same thing. I know CC Sabathia feels that way. You know, what's weird about it, because if you go back to even the Bobby Thompson home run, you know, the shot heard around the world, one of the most famous home runs, there was, you know, the story that came out that he might have been tipped off to the pitch.
Right.
I just look at, you know, basketball, you'll have advanced scouts will go to games with the sole purpose of watching whatever team they're going to scout. They'll look at the coach, get the signals that he's calling, and then diagram the play. In theory, they're stealing. But
yeah,
it's kind of like an accepted practice. You know, I think once you get technology involved, I think, you know, it's a little over the top. Do I think a year suspension? I get it. Baseball takes itself very seriously. The writers that cover it full-time take it very seriously. I understand it's a serious thing. I think the whole thing is a little overblown. I would suspensions, yes. A year suspension, losing your job, I mean, that's pretty excessive.
What's wild to me is, and we've talked about this before, baseball really gets wrapped up in morality, whether it's taking
Yep. Peds,
whether it's HGH, whatever it is that's banned that the players take, and they really significantly, the writers do, but also the sport in general, really just kind of, it's a long lamentation of all the failures. And then when guys get caught cheating in the NFL, it's like we can barely remember that it happened. Remember Julian Edelman
Yes. Got
caught cheating, and then later that same season, he's the MVP of the Super Bowl, and nobody even blinks, right? Like, we had John Morosi on the show yesterday, and he's a Hall of Fame voter, and he was like, you know, I'm not sure what I'll do about guys like Altuve, you know, because when you look at their numbers, do you question whether or not they've been inflated and things like that? And I don't even know if anybody will even contemplate in any way in the NFL Hall of Fame voters when they look at down the road Julian Edelman, if he has another couple of good years, will the fact that he was suspended for PEDs even in any way weigh in? I don't think so.
And I think a lot of it with baseball, you know, baseball is all about numbers. You know, whether
yeah.
it's 300 wins for a pitcher, 50 home runs for a hitter. You know, the number 61 stands out, you know, when it was Roger Maris that hit that. So because the numbers are so important, a 20-game winner, even though now nobody ever pitches past five innings, so it's hard to get 20 wins in a season. Where, like, the numbers, for example, like basketball, I know that Kareem is the all-time scoring leader. If you ask me, put a gun to my head, I'm not going to be able to tell you what the number is. And the same thing when I know that Drew Brees on that one, I guess it was a Monday night game when he broke
Yeah. Whatever
record it was. Like, I mean, the year is a little bit different. I mean, I remember Dan Marino. I still think Dan Marino's a better quarterback than Drew Brees. I know everyone went, like, a little overboard with that whole thing. But the numbers in football really don't mean that much anymore. When O.J. broke the record, the rushing record, that kind of was interesting, you know, getting over 2,000 yards or whatever the case was. But it's just not the same. I think that has a little bit to do with kind of the self-importance of the game. And definitely the baseball writers. I covered baseball for 2 years. It is tough to cover baseball, especially in New York. There's a reason why they're so miserable. It is not an easy job. You know, it takes away your entire summer. It's a, you know, 6 weeks of spring training. But I always kind of feel like even the writers, to a certain degree, feel they're kind of the stewards of the game. And I'm not knocking the baseball writers, but especially the guys in New York. They do a really good job. They're really aggressive. They hold, you know, the best players accountable. In the NBA, we never do that. Everyone who covers, you know, an NBA team, they always want to kiss up to the big superstar. In baseball, the writers are not like that. But I think that has something to do with it. The commissioner's office, the owners, and definitely the media all play into that.
Yeah, it is interesting the way you talk about the way the media covers baseball. And maybe it's the grind of the baseball season where you have to be there every day. But it is
Yep. Funny
to me. Maybe it's also just the fact that, like, when Hulk Hogan or somebody gets caught using steroids, or a WWE person does, everybody's like, yeah, no kidding. We've seen them with their shirts off, right? Like, we've seen them in the
yep.
in the ring. Like, you don't look like that just because you happen to go and bench press every day for 45 minutes, right? Like, you have to do something extra in order to get that big. But it is, I always think, for football, kind of maybe that factoring in too, everyone assumes that guys in football, because
yeah.
their bodies are yeah. so big and strong and wrestler-like, that everybody's doing something on the edge or beyond the edge in order to play. And maybe people just don't care, right? I mean, I think there's an
yep.
element of people
yeah.
out there who's like, hey, if that makes the game more entertaining, I want these guys to roid up like crazy. And in baseball, it's certainly not the case that
yeah,
is
yeah,
true,
one,
although
one,
people kind of willfully disbelieved when all the home runs started getting hit. People were like, well, they're better training methods now. You know, like, and the reality is maybe a lot more going on than that.
Yeah, and I think once McGuire and Sosa did what they did, and then Barry Bonds, what, he at 73, where it was ridiculous. I still remember being in, I covered, believe it or not, the Toronto Blue Jays, Philadelphia Phillies World Series. I was there, actually, when Joe Carter hit that home
yeah.
run. That was pretty crazy. But I was in that Phillies locker room a bunch, and that's with Darren Dalton you know, Lenny Dykstra,
oh, yeah,
Pete Incaviglia, Dave Holland. I mean, these guys would take their shirts off, and, you know, they'd have all the acne on their back. They were gigantic, and it was almost like everyone kind of said, well, clearly they must be doing something.
Right.
So then, of course, you know, years later, it was coming out. Once it started getting ridiculous with Clemens and some of the things that he was doing, the achievements he was having, and obviously Bonds with the 73. But I'll say this, too. I covered Barry Bonds, you know, before he blew up like that, literally,
yeah,
and figuratively. He was a great, great player. I'm still of the belief that Barry Bonds was looking at these other guys saying, hang on a second, I'm better than all these dudes. And they're taking this stuff, and they're getting it, gain advantage. I'm going to start taking it, too.
Yeah, I think that's 100%. I mean, Barry Bonds would have been a Hall of Famer even if he had never taken anything, much like Ken Griffey Jr., who seems to be one of the few guys of that entire generation who never did anything and kind of naturally relied on his talent like most people would have back in the day, although back in the day they were doing a lot of things on the edge of competitive fairness as well. All right, I want to circle around to the Antonio Brown. We talked about Antonio Brown yesterday, and I wonder if this is something you think about sometimes. At what point do you become, and I mean you and me and everybody else out there talking about Antonio Brown, become complicit in his descent into, I think, you know, just recklessness, in that we can't look away. It's almost like a car crash when you're driving by, but, you know, we're all rubbernecking at his career collapsing. At what point does it stop being a media story and you almost have to say, we're complicit here, we have to stop paying attention to this?
You know,
it's a tough balancing act, right?
Yeah, it got like that a little bit with Dennis Rodman, but also Rodman, it wasn't really social media at the time. But it does reach a point where you do feel like, I think that the guy, first of all, he thinks he's interesting and he thinks he's smart, which is kind of like a scary thought. That video of him with his kids and then the police, first of all,
yes,
it appears that he only knows three words in the English language.
Yeah.
And they're not like ones that are really going to get you ahead. I thought the whole thing was so embarrassing. Like, when I used to think of Antonio Brown and the Steelers, I always thought that he was a great player. And it's funny. Sometimes these guys think the more people know about me, they'll like me even more. The
right.
less people knew about Antonio Brown, it was better for him.
Oh, you know, so true.
Right? You thought the Pittsburgh, like, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers are a great organization. You know, the way that they do things, it was like, ah, he's just like another one of these great players that's going through there. He wants to become larger than life, and he exposed himself. That's the one thing about social media, what it's done for a lot of guys, whether they use it like he did, which is off the charts, or you get some guys on there who, like, their English might not be that good or they're misspelling words. I always used to say with, like, a lot of the players, sometimes, this is with every player, it's not a racial thing, white or black, you would sometimes kind of clean up their English for them.
Yeah.
Now that they have kind of this, like, you know, direct conduit or, you know, direct link to the fans, sometimes it's not. For some guys, it's a great thing, and they use it to their advantage. But a guy like Antonio Brown, you could just tell that he thinks he's outsmarting everyone. He doesn't even realize that he's humiliating himself. That's the thing. And where are the people in his life to tell him that? His agent or somebody?
No, it's well said. All right, we got the AFC and the NFC championship games coming up in a couple of days here on the weekend. And the Titans are on the road against the Chiefs. The Packers are on the road against the 49ers. Who has the most at stake here? Quarterbacks, franchises, coaches? When you break it down just in terms of the most at stake, the most to gain, the most to lose, how would you assess these four teams?
You know, I think Andy Reid, the fact that he's never won a Super Bowl, we know that he's been there, and he has home field advantage, and you're playing a team that's going to be playing for three straight weeks. I would say Andy Reid and Aaron Rodgers, even though I get it that Aaron Rodgers is playing on the road, you don't know how much he has, you know, how many more times.
Yeah, he's going to be there.
Exactly. I mean, I know you're big into Tennessee. I love the way that they played. And, you know, Derrick Henry has been the MVP of the playoffs thus far. And, they get after it. They hit so darn hard. I mean, they're physical on both sides of the ball. Their offensive line, defensive line is great. My only thing about Rodgers, and I'm hoping Tennessee wins, and I'd like to see Aaron Rodgers get back there as well. I just worry about Aaron Rodgers with the pass rush of the 49ers. I think that, you know, you can make the case that Bosa might be the best player in the entire NFL. I mean, the guy is constantly in the backfield creating all kinds of havoc. So it'll just be interesting to see how Derrick Henry does and how Bosa does in those games. They could be two players that dominate, but I'm sure you got to be a little worried with the way that Kansas City played offensively. They're just so darn fast. And, you know, Mahomes plays the way that Lamar Jackson wishes on his best day in an important game, in a playoff game, to play. Where you can throw the ball like that, and then when there's an opening to run, you could run. Because Patrick Mahomes is so good. And I was disappointed in Lamar Jackson. I know we're not allowed to criticize him because if you criticize him, it's a referendum.
Yeah.
When did we reach the point where he set the standard? Lamar Jackson set the standard for how great of a season he had. He did not have a good playoff game. You could dress it up any way you want. How about the fact that on 4th and 1, 2 times, he could not get a first down? That to me, that and the fumble that he had when he didn't recognize that the pass rush was behind him. Those to me were 3 alarming plays. He did not deliver in a home playoff game. I'm sorry, it's not him. He didn't lose on the road to the undefeated New England Patriots with Tom Brady. No offense, he lost to Ryan Tannehill, a team that was coming off having to play the week before. It's just a little bizarre. But getting back to my point, I just think that Mahomes is just so dangerous. That would concern me. Obviously, if you're the Tennessee Titans.
You know, it is interesting. Somehow, Lamar Jackson has become the guy that it's not acceptable to criticize. And that's strange to me because most of the NFL at the quarterback position, guys get raked over the coals, right? If you just take it back, a 10 or 15 years, the most criticized quarterback in the NFL for a long time was Peyton Manning. Because he couldn't win the big game, right? That's what everybody said. Oh, Peyton Manning can't win the big game. And then he wins a Super Bowl, and people are like, well, he beat Rex Grossman. He can't win 2 Super Bowls, and then he wins 2 Super Bowls and retires. And it's like he's finally redeemed himself. You get to multiple Super Bowls, and it was hard to criticize him. But I feel like Lamar Jackson is going to have to accept that mantle now. And before Manning, it was who? You could maybe say Dan Marino, who you mentioned earlier, but John Elway. John Elway could win a lot of games in the regular season, but then he finally finishes off his career with back-to-back Super Bowls. But Elway and Manning both got destroyed for years for their regular season success, which was not followed by postseason success. And so it was interesting. I came on Monday and I said, look, Titans got a big win, but is Lamar Jackson going to be of that ilk, right, where he's Peyton Manning, where he is John Elway? What those guys represented was they were always in the mix. Like, I think you were talking about Patrick Mahomes. If Mahomes loses on Sunday, yes, that's 2 straight AFC championship losses, but he's going to be around for the next decade or more in the mix to make the Super Bowl, to win a championship. I have zero doubt as long as he stays healthy, he's going to do it. What I don't know about Lamar Jackson is, will he have that longevity where he doesn't have to strike where the iron is hot, or is he going to be like Colin Kaepernick, who fades, Tim Tebow, Vince Young, RG3, mobile quarterbacks who had their moment where they looked like they were going to be transcendent, and then they didn't have that long-range career, so they had to win it right then and there? That, to me, is a great debate.
Yeah, and I think, too, like, I even throw Josh Allen in there. He didn't have the season that Lamar Jackson had, but he kind of runs to run the ball. Where I look at Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers is like this, Steve Young was like that, and obviously Mahomes is like that, where when they run, they look like they're running because they know there's a big opening, and eventually they're going to give themselves up, slide, and get the first down. With Lamar Jackson, it seems like he wants to run a lot of times. I thought Allen was the same way, but everyone was making excuses. The receiver should have that. The pass was thrown high. How about the pass into the flat? How about the fumble that he had? How about the 2 4th-and-1s that he had?
Yeah.
Like, that's not good enough. He did not take a 9-7 team, go on the road, lose at, like, New England. You said, hey, give the guy credit. New England's a tough team. He's lost back-to-back years at home, and this year as the highest seed against Philip Rivers.
A double-digit underdog. Yeah.
Yeah, and Ryan Tannehill. And by the way, he has scored. They have scored a total of 29 points in those 2 home playoff games. When you're the highest seed, I'm sorry, I don't care who the quarterback is, you lose as the higher seed in your first game in the divisional round, it's unacceptable. There's no excuses to be made. It doesn't mean that eventually he's not going to win. He might win next year. But my God, we're only allowed to praise the guy? We can't criticize him for what was not a good performance. I don't know how anybody could dress it up any other way.
Yeah, it is. It is a little bit interesting that he's become the one guy that can't be criticized in the NFL this year. And I don't know if it was because people felt like he was unfairly criticized to begin with, but the guy was a first-round pick. Such a low draft. He drafted in the first round. I mean, Aaron Rodgers was a low first-round draft pick, right? I mean, friggin' Tom Brady was a 6th-round pick. I mean, there are a lot of guys out there that the NFL misses on. of all different stripes and sizes and talents. I mean, Gardner Minshew this year obviously drastically exceeded where he was drafted in terms of basically they benched Nick Foles to allow him to play. I don't know what his long-range future is going to be in Jacksonville, but even still, he's vastly drafted himself based on the performance that goes on right now. This happens all the time that NFL talent scouts miss on people. I don't know if you can be called a miss when you're a first-round pick.
I know. And I also think, too, you know, you mentioned Peyton Manning. It's a great example because now it's like anything that Lamar Jackson does in the regular season, you know, kind of like the way certain basketball players are judged. Like LeBron is judged on how he does in the postseason.
Right.
Lamar Jackson could have this great regular season because Peyton Manning has had the great regular season. And we always used to say he's got to do it in the playoffs, though. He's going to have
right.
to get to a Super Bowl and win. And I think that, you know, so Lamar Jackson next season, you hope it happens that he has a great regular season. Where people are going to say, hey, you know what's right now on his resume? Everything that he's done, and he's accomplished a lot. Again, two home playoff losses. And he didn't lose to, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers in the steel curtain with Mean Joe Green or the undefeated New England Patriots from, you know, a decade ago. He lost to the Chargers, who don't beat anybody, and Tennessee, which, granted, they did catch Tennessee at a tough time for Baltimore because Tennessee's on a roll, and sometimes that certainly factors into the playoffs. And maybe we all, except for you people in Tennessee, we probably all underestimated Derrick Henry. I would love to be a defensive back. I wonder what goes through their minds when he breaks through the line of scrimmage. Not when he's on a sweep where he's, you know, on a turning a little bit. When he's coming directly at you. I wonder what the defensive back thinks at that point. They probably I should have gone into baseball.
And or I'm going to try to force him towards the sideline, but he's probably not going to let me do that. That was, I mean, he's on a roll. I mean, like Mike Vrabel said, when you hear – bet, you know, someone has never done it before, and it's a good thing. And by the way, over 180, three straight games, including two straight in the playoffs. That is a pretty improbable collection of streaks that he's on right now. Good stuff as always, Frank Isola. We will talk to you next week.
Good luck to your team this weekend, Clay.
I need it. It'll be a lot
You're
of fun.
You're gonna need it.
We're definitely going to need it. It'll be a lot of fun down at the Super Bowl if the Titans are there. Plus, I get to bring all my kids and everybody else. We'd have a good time.
Hey,
at
you
the
know what?
Frank.
You're like a sports writer. You just think about yourself. That's the way we do it.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I don't care about anybody else. But my kids, they would think it was amazing to get to go to the Super Bowl. I told them I'd take them.
Exactly.
If the Titans ever got there, I didn't think it would happen this year. I'm not sure I thought it would happen in my lifetime, to be honest. He's at the Frank Isola. Go follow him on Twitter. You can listen to him at SiriusXM. You can read him at The Athletic, and you can watch him on ESPN. Good stuff as always, my man.
Thanks, Clay.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
It's funny, as we finish off hour one here, on I believe it was Monday, or maybe it was Tuesday. Everything's running together this week with all the travel. I was in New Orleans, now I'm out in L.A., and J-Mart is in with me. You hit us with, I thought, a pretty good stat. Maybe it was on Monday, which was something that I haven't heard anybody else talking about, but it's rare that you get a stat that has never occurred before. And an example would be Derrick Henry has now gone for 180 yards plus for three straight games, which has never occurred before in the history of the NFL. He's on a hot streak, the likes of which no running back has ever attained. And as Mike Vrabel says, anytime you look at the entire history of the NFL and you have something that's been done that's never been done before, that's a pretty good endorsement. That's a pretty good sign of strength in terms of that accomplishment, right?
Right.
And you hit me with one, which I haven't even seen anybody else steal, which is rare, because usually in this business, when somebody has a good stat, it's out on Twitter, somebody else grabs it, next thing you know, everybody's talking about it, particularly when there are a couple of big games going on that everybody, regardless of where they are across the country, is talking about, the AFC and the NFC title game. And your stat is this: if the Titans were to beat the Chiefs, they would have beaten every division winner in the AFC on the road in four straight weeks, which can never, I would imagine, have happened before.
Yeah, it hasn't. Steelers fans hit me up and said, hey, it happened in 05 with us. And I looked up their record and I said, no, you played the Lions in week 17. The reason why this stat is so rare is because it doesn't stack up this way.
Right.
You have to match up that way. Look, a lot of people are putting an asterisk on it. because the first one of these was the Texans, who, of course, won the AFC South and didn't play some of their starters in the final game. You can do that all you want, but they were not forced not to play people. All the Titans could do is play the game, and the last time I checked, there was a W in that column that actually counted. So you can put the asterisk there if you want. I'm not going to allow that because they did beat the Houston Texans in Week 17. Then they went to Foxborough and beat the AFC East champion Patriots. Then they beat the Baltimore Ravens, the AFC North champions, and now they have a chance to beat the AFC West champions. All in a row, all on the road, all required as well to continue playing football. Every single week, they were going to have to win that game, especially, I mean, you had to beat the Texans, and then outside of that, you had to continue to win, or every game would have been your last. It's incredible, Clay. It really is. Like, this has been as tough a run as a team could possibly see in the postseason because it's all division champions, and it's all on the road, and that's why nobody's been giving Tennessee much of a chance week in and week out. But here they are. They're still standing, and they've got one more to go. Then they would complete this quartet and then head to Miami.
An easy way to test this is, first of all, it's rare that a six seed plays for a conference championship to begin
yes.
with. In fact, I've got, since 1982, there have been seven teams that have done this. In other words, be the six seed in the AFC or the NFC, the 1982 Jets, the 2000, it's become more common of late, which probably is a function. Honestly, it's an interesting read I had in the Wall Street Journal recently where the home field advantage in the NFL has continued to decline. You know, the general rule is you give 3 points to the home team. It's continued to decline. And we can talk about this later in the show because I do think, in fact, maybe let's go ahead and talk about this at the top of hour two, the other teams that have done this. But it's interesting that the six seeds have started to have more success of late because of the decline of the home field advantage. And I got a couple of theories on why that might be. But here are the teams that have done it. The 82 Jets, the 2005 Steelers, 2008 Ravens, the 2008 Eagles, the 2010 Jets, the 2010 Packers, and now the 2019 Titans. The Packers in 2010 and the Steelers in 2005 both won and advanced to the Super Bowl. The other four teams have lost, obviously, on the road as they are the sixth seed attempting to advance. But why would it be 1982 and then a huge gap and then start to happen more commonly? I think it's because home field advantage has become less of an advantage. Why is that? We'll talk about it at the start of hour two.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
We just knocked out hour one. A lot of fun. Encourage you to go download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss anything. Frank Isola was great. I am out in L.A., a little bit of a wild schedule this week. Started the week in New Orleans, going to finish the week in L.A. Eventually, we'll make it back to Nashville, where I'll sit and watch the Titans play on the road against the Chiefs. And at the same time, later that day, I will watch the Packers on the road against the 49ers. And one of the interesting things about the NFL is the home field advantage has started to vanish when it comes to playoffs. You know, it used to be a big deal. You get the home field advantage. You want to make sure that you're at home and you don't miss anything. And it matters a great deal and what seed you are and every other aspect associated with that. But it hasn't mattered as much of late. In fact, the home field advantage in general has started to just disappear in sports in general. But also, why would it be that the home field advantage would become less and less of a advantage? Used to be it was massive to have the opportunity to play your games at home. Now, not so much. And so I read a Wall Street Journal article, which I am looking for right now in the archives to see if I can find the NFL home field advantage article. But in general, over the last several years, it's vanished. And why is that? Well, there's an argument that potentially the offenses have become so much more streamlined. Maybe it's the having the headset in the quarterback's ability to communicate is easier. There are lots of different arguments about it. But it used to be that you got an automatic three-point advantage for being able to play at home. Now, in the most recent data, according to the Wall Street Journal, that advantage has minimized all the way down to like half a point. In other words, when they are able to contextualize, whether it's Arrowhead, which has a tremendous home field advantage, or Lambeau Field, or the Coors Field, like whatever it is, the advantage in the NFL has ceased to exist as much. And you got two home field advantages of around a touchdown with the Chiefs going up against the Titans and the 49ers going up against the Packers. But statistically, the home field advantage is now almost non-existent. And you saw this in the wild card this year, right? The Texans were fortunate to win in overtime against the Bills. You almost had four road teams come in and win. And you saw it certainly in the game against the Ravens. The Titans didn't seem to be impacted at all by that home field advantage, which is pretty clear and apparent for the Baltimore Ravens. In fact, interestingly, for whatever reason, the Titans have been a much better team on the road than they have been at home. The Titans, I believe, finished 4-4 at home this year, and they went 7-3 now on the road. They've been a lot better. So, Jason Martin, have you noticed this? And if so, what would you attribute it to? Why would the home field advantage over recent history have started to vanish? And I think there's good evidence of it here when you look at the sixth seed, because the sixth seed, typically, you know you're going to have to play on the road for three straight weeks if you're the sixth seed in the NFL. And all the way back to 1982, only one team, the Jets, managed to get to the AFC Championship game as the sixth seed. And then it happened in 2005, twice in 2008, twice in 2010, and in 2019, where winning two in a row has become not exactly rare, so that you can find yourself for a third straight road game as the trend lines have started to decline in terms of the overall home field advantage.
It is interesting. I don't know if it's... Well, I mean, I think that there's a little bit more parity, perhaps, from year to year. I was looking at a 538 article that went from 2000 to 2017 and looked at home teams in the regular season and home teams in playoffs in the four major sports. And interestingly enough, the NFL actually has the biggest number in terms of an advantage for home teams in the playoffs, but that's not the way it's kind of been going over this last year, for sure not this year, but it goes from a 57% win percentage in the regular season to 64.7% in the playoffs, which is the biggest of the four major sports. The NBA jumps about 5%, Major League Baseball jumps almost not at all, and hockey doesn't jump at all. Like, it's 0.2 and 0.2 for those sports. So the NFL is still doing it, but I don't know what really explains it. The only thing I was thinking about when you were thinking of that is who's going to these games, because you're seeing more and more stadiums that aren't nearly as full.
Yeah.
And I think that has something to do with it as well. The advantage ain't as loud when the building ain't as loud. Like, when there's not as many people in the seats, it's not as tough to go somewhere on the road and play. Like, you still know, like, when you think of home field advantage in the NFL, you immediately think of Seattle. You probably still think of Lambeau. I think if Green Bay had gone to Seattle instead of vice versa, I think Seattle probably wins that game. Lambeau and the cold and things like that, and I think temperature also can play into it. Foxborough was the ultimate home field for a long time. They had like an 850 win percentage there, which is dwarfs anybody else. But the Titans went ahead and handled that business. And actually, the Dolphins handled business at the end of the regular season as well, so they lost back-to-back in Foxborough. So I don't know really the answer for it. But I also, when I think of, oh, they're going on the road, it doesn't just have the same dire, I'm not as dark about it. It's not as bleak if my team is going on the road anymore as maybe it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, and I don't know if, you know, certain teams seem to kind of revel in going on the road and ruining the home field advantage more so than others. But I don't think, in other words, for a long time, the 12th man was a big selling point. You mentioned Seattle. Well, the Seahawks were much better on the road this year than
they
were at home, right? I believe the Seahawks went, did they go 3-5 at home, I believe, this year?
I think that might be right.
And 8-2 on the road. I know they were 8-1 and they lost their final game, obviously, on the road against the Packers. But you have this idea of, oh, the home crowd's going to show up and they're going to fire up the team. And I've always said, you know, this is kind of funny. Like, you know, I got to do the halftime contest back in the day. And some people remember this. I've told this story before. When I was 22, I was sitting in the crowd, and they brought me out to the field. They came up to my seat and they said, "Do you want to be in the halftime contest?" And I was like, "Sure." So they took me out on the field to catch a 25 and a 40 yarder, right?
Yeah.
And that is out of a punt machine. Like, I had to stand out there on the field and catch it. I think that on the field, and I've been fortunate enough to watch games from the field. I wrote a couple of books about SEC football, where obviously the home field advantage is such a huge part of the storyline. Oh, how hard is it going to be to go on the road and win at X place? Football, to me, compared to other sports, the noise is anonymous. And what I mean by that is you're not necessarily attributing somebody talking trash or yelling at you or cheering against you to a particular individual. It's just kind of a dull cacophony of roar. And so you can, in some way, even though it's loud, in your mind, it almost can become background noise in football in a way that it can't in other sports. It's interesting you were talking about other sports. They have studied, for instance, free throws. And to me, when I watch, let's say, an NBA or a college venue, and there are guys, college kids, or there's people behind the free throw, you know, with like waving everything and all. You know, there's a 1% at most difference between free throw shooting at home and on the road in the NBA. And that's basically across the board. People are not, by and large, impacted by the craziness and the zaniness that goes on behind the backboard. And so what they said was maybe in this Wall Street Journal article, which I've got in front of me right now, that the biggest impact to home field advantage declining is actually officiating, because the most impacted people by the crowd statistically when they look at the analytics are the officials. And with instant replay, beforehand, the home team got the benefit of the doubt at a huge percentage rate. And with instant replay coming in, now the officials are less likely to be influenced by the home crowd. And if you think about it, that actually makes a lot of sense, because psychologically, everybody wants to be liked. They want to be favored. And if you're an official and you're just getting booed to the high heavens over calls, in the back of your head, you might be thinking, "Hey, did I miss that one?" and be more likely to give a borderline call to the home team. That gets eliminated with instant replay. Right? So with instant replay, you can go back and you can look and say, "Oh, okay, the knee wasn't down. That wasn't a fumble. That was a touchdown," whatever it was. They can go back and they can actually review it, and it doesn't end up being the advantage that it was for the home team in years past. That was, according to the analytics article in the Wall Street Journal, the single most impactful part of the home field advantage, and I think that might surprise people.
Yeah, I think this is interesting too. I was looking at Pro Football Reference and an article that had put together some of their stats. Between 2002 and 2014, the win percentage of NFL home teams by round makes a big difference. Wild card and the regular season are almost the same at 57.7%. Then it jumps, Clay, to 65.4% in both the divisional round and the conference championships, which, if you think about it, really only one team won on the road of these games that we just saw. So it actually sort of backs it up. And that makes sense. I mean, there's not rocket science that's required to understand this. There's better teams playing at home further into the postseason, so it's going to be harder to win there anyway. But I do think it's interesting that the wild card almost means nothing in terms of being any more relevant than it is during the regular season.
Well, that would also factor in, because sometimes the division teams that are hosting the home playoff games are actually not as good.
Are you trying to talk yourself into Tennessee? Is that what the whole point of this segment is?
No.
To say, "Hey, the Titans are going to Arrowhead." Do you know that Kansas City has a terrible home field advantage? I actually read this as well. Since 2013, they've lost 27 games, 13 of those at home. So 48% of Chiefs' losses over the past 5 years have come at Arrowhead.
Yeah, now Chiefs fans would say, "Well, it's a new era with Patrick Mahomes. We don't care about all that history of futility that
he
had in the postseason." I think it does factor in a little bit with Andy Reid. And I think Andy Reid, the craziest stat that's out there, is Andy Reid is 1-10 all time against the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah.
I believe that's accurate. That makes no sense.
No, it doesn't.
He didn't have any success with them at the Eagles, and the Titans, for whatever reason, have owned Andy Reid and the Chiefs in recent history, including a couple of years ago in the playoffs when Marcus Mariota took the Titans on the road and came back from a 21-3 deficit. Now, that was Alex Smith. That was the last year of Alex Smith, certainly. But the Titans managed to find a way to beat the Chiefs in Nashville this year. They went on the road a couple of years ago and bombed through a late field goal by Ryan Succop to win that game. So there are some reasons for apprehension, I think, if you're a Chiefs fan. But the larger story of what's happened to the home field advantage, I just thought that officiating being able to be reviewed instant replay-wise is an intriguing aspect of that story.
For sure.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Joined now by John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. He has been covering the Houston Texans for a long time. And John, I don't know where that game ranks on wackiest, wildest games you have ever covered, but 24-0, the lead for the Texans. I'm going to take you back into that scenario. What were you thinking when Bill O'Brien kicks the field goal there to go up 24-0? Watching that game, did you feel like the Texans were in complete control, or did you still feel like, hey, these Kansas City Chiefs have a chance? Take me into that exact scenario, that situation. Did you think he should have gone for it? What was your thought
process? First of all, I saw you tweet this as something, and I thought you're showing your age. That was nowhere near January 3rd, 1993, when the Oilers blew the biggest lead.
Were you there? You were there.
Of course,
right?
I was there. I covered 44 years.
I
threw 35-3 midway through the third quarter, so 24-0 early in the second quarter pales by comparison.
Even giving up 51?
Yeah, and truthfully, I had no problem kicking a field goal because they'd gone for it on 4th-and-1 against Buffalo. It had failed. Buffalo went down the field, kicked a field goal, forced overtime, and they could have lost because it didn't work.
Oh, right.
So
yeah.
you're up four scores. And then the 58-yard kickoff return set up an easy touchdown. So it's 24-7, and I'm going, eh. And then when they had the back-to-back snafus, first of all, O'Brien's boneheaded decision to try a fake punt from his own 31, setting up an easy touchdown, and DeAndre Carter fumbling a kickoff. When you choke as a team, you start doing things you didn't do in regular season. But I looked at the guy next to me from the Chronicle, Brian T. Smith, after that fake punt. I said, this game's over. Chiefs are going to win. And I wasn't wrong. Not only did they win, they ended up blowing them out with 41 consecutive points.
What was Bill O'Brien thinking? And the answer may be he wasn't thinking very much at all on the fake punt. It looked desperate, like the kind of thing you would do if you were trailing 24-7 as opposed to up 24-7.
He said after the game, he said he knew they were going to have to score a lot of points, and he threw out 50.
Yeah.
And then he admitted the next day, somebody said, that's hyperbole, right? He didn't think you're going to have to score 50. He said, no, of course it's hyperbole. I thought we need to score a lot of points. Now, I disagreed with that decision. Everybody did. I know Tony Romo said, because I went back and watched the broadcast, he thought it was a good decision, but bad execution. The execution was on the part of Sorensen, the safety for the Chiefs, who made a great play.
No doubt.
He diagnosed it. He was the only player on that defense, because I went back to watch it, the only player on the coverage team who figured it out, and he made a great open field tackle. And sometimes guys make great plays to keep teams from doing what they should do or you want them to do. And there were a lot of things the Chiefs did right. And I tell you what, Clay, Andy Reid has not been good. The Chiefs have not been good in the playoffs at Arrowhead. And for them not to fold when they're down 24-0 and to come back, that says a lot about them. And I'm sure that will help them in the AFC Championship game against the Titans.
How would you assess that AFC Championship game? But before we get there, Lamar Jackson loses two straight at home. You have been covering guys in the, you said 44 years, in the NFL for a long time. When I hear Lamar Jackson starting off 0-2, I start to have a little bit of thoughts of, oh, you know, Peyton Manning couldn't win in the postseason despite having great regular seasons for a while. John Elway, what guys do you remember at the quarterback position that you have covered that have been similar in the way they started their careers? A lot of great success early on in the regular season, but the postseason arrives and the question begins to bubble up, can they translate their regular season success into the postseason?
Dallas Cowboys with Roger Staubach. and then they won two. And it's happened before. Quarterbacks have to grow into it. Coaches have to grow into the quarterbacks. Coaches tend to do a better job. Players, they put players around them better. Jackson should be the MVP, was the best player during regular season. Then at some point, people say, okay, you're doing it in a regular season. Now you've got to do it in the playoffs. And I thought the Titans did an incredible job against him, just like the Chargers did last year. Tennessee has pulled off two remarkable upsets in Baltimore and Foxborough. And because they is capable of winning at Arrowhead Stadium, that's why I'm really excited about this game, both of these games. Three of the head coaches used to work for the Texans as assistants, so I know these guys. And I'm sure Lamar Jackson, he's got John Harbaugh, he got a lot of talent around him, good front office. They'll do whatever it takes to help maximize his strengths next year, because I think we all believe they will be back.
Is the story to you the Titans more than it's the Ravens? The Titans win over the Ravens loss. Everybody has to make a decision, writers in particular, what's the angle in which we're going to characterize and cover this. When you watched that game, what jumped out at you more, the Titans' performance or the Ravens' performance?
The Ravens' performance, because 2 years in a row,
yeah.
And they were the best team in the league. They had a 12-game winning streak. They were the high-scoring team. Jackson, 36 touchdown passes, 6 interceptions, 7 rushing. And I thought about him and the fact the Titans beat him. Now, Derrick Henry was close behind. He's doing things unprecedented in the last year of his contract. And Ryan Tannehill, the last year of his contract. And I think it says a lot about Mike Vrabel and his coaching staff that they could win in Foxborough and Baltimore. But as well as they played old-fashioned football, setting back analytics 10 years, it's still, when the top dog goes down so decisively, that is the big story.
You said you knew several of these coaches before they became head coaches. What were your impressions of Mike Vrabel when he was in Houston?
In 2001, I was covering the NFL between the Oilers leaving and the Texans beginning to play. For 8 years, Clay, I went wherever I wanted, spent whatever I wanted to spend, wrote as much as I wanted, and I spent a lot of time in Nashville because the Titans were up there. It was a great story. And I really, really got to know some of the Patriots, and they started telling me, particularly their inside linebacker, Ted Johnson, 10 years he played and now is a broadcaster in Boston. He was from Houston. He'd tell me, man, Mike Vrabel's going to be a head coach. I didn't know Vrabel, but he kept telling me that. When Ted came here and was on my talk show at Texans Flagship, he said, man, when Vrabel, he's an assistant coach now, he's going to be a head coach, he's going to be a good one. Bill O'Brien, the second year Vrabel was here, man, this guy's going to be a great head coach. They just all said he had everything it took. And I didn't know he would do as well as he's done in his second year. And he's done a tremendous job. Plus, he's very popular up there, as he should be. The next thing for them to do, of course, is to win a division and not finish 9-7 for like the 15th consecutive year.
All right, the Texans. I'm going to go back to the Texans now. What happens in the offseason for them? I know J.J. Watt came back and played, I think, better than anticipated, certainly in the wild card game. I thought he got out of position several times and allowed Patrick Mahomes to scramble maybe in ways that he shouldn't have, trying to be a little bit too aggressive getting up upfield. But he's coming back. Theoretically, he'll be healthy. And theoretically, although he can't seem to stay healthy, maybe Will Fuller will be back and be healthy. And what is the expectation going forward, and what is going to happen with Bill O'Brien?
Not a thing's going to happen to Bill O'Brien. He's the coach and he's the general manager without the title. He has total control. And actually, I thought he did a better job as the GM than he did as the head coach this year. He made all the moves. He's got people underneath him, of course, scouting and personnel that he relies on. But last year, they targeted their offense. They had 6 new starters, 3 in the offensive line. This year, they need to target the defense. They need help with the pass rush. They need help in the secondary. It's not Romeo Crennel, the defensive coordinator's fault, that Watt missed 8 games with a torn pec. O'Brien trade Javion Clowney to Seattle, and Tyrann Mathieu got a better offer from Kansas City. So you take out three of their best players, you're not going to be as good. But their defense was awful. It was exposed time and again by good quarterbacks. They beat a lot of good quarterbacks like Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady, but they've got to get better in the pass rush and the pass coverage and just tweak a few things on the offense. But mainly they got to work on the defense.
All right, let's go to the AFC and NFC title games. The Titans on the road against the Chiefs. What do you expect to see? What kind of chance would you give the Titans to pull off the upset?
I would give them a good chance. When the Texans went to Arrowhead and won this year 31-24, they controlled the ball for more than 40 minutes. Mahomes still had three touchdown passes with only 19 minutes to work with. But with Derrick Henry, the Chiefs' weakness on defense is stopping the run. And they know what's coming. Everybody knows what's coming. You're right there. And Nashville, you know, you see it. You may stop him in the first half or in the third quarter, but eventually he's going to break one and he's going to wear you down. And if you play eight-man fronts, they're going to use play action, and Tannehill can throw the ball down the field. He's accurate. He doesn't have to throw much at all. He can if he has to. And he's also a good runner. So they're going to pose a big problem for the Chiefs' defense. And with the Chiefs, they don't have a good running game. Texans did a great job against the Chiefs running back. They did a great job against Tyreek Hill. And they only gave up 51 points. They have to be able to contain Travis Kelce, double him. If you can contain Kelce and Hill, and it works great if you have a safety who can cover Kelce or an extra corner, he is so valuable to what Mahomes wants to do. He has to be a big part of the game plan. And I don't think the Chiefs are going to drop third down passes on the first three series, fumble a punt, get a punt blocked. They're not going to be, the Titans are not going to be as fortunate as the Texans were in the first quarter.
Derrick Henry, you've been covering, you said earlier, we're talking to John McClain, Houston Chronicle. You've been covering the league for 44 years. Where would you contextualize, how would you contextualize Derrick Henry? What does he remind you of other great running backs that you have seen? He's done something none of them have ever done, over 183 straight.
You don't see many running backs who are 6'3". Eddie George, Chuck Muncy. He's Eddie George with more speed and a better stiff arm. You know, Eddie was as tough as they come. You've watched him every year he played. And Henry takes a beating. When you're a big back, you're going to get beat on a lot. And he never seems to slow down. He never seems to be affected. Now, he has not been able to do this consistently for a full season. A lot of that has to do with his offensive line. A lot of it, I think, in the past, he had Mariota at quarterback, so he faced more people in the box than he does now. And I love watching him play. I love great running backs, Clay. Every time I go to the Hall of Fame, I go in the theater, and I push buttons so I can watch the greatest runners of all time. And watching Derrick Henry with his size and his speed and his stiff arm, there's nobody I'd rather watch more in the NFL right now, because he's old school, but he's also new school because he does everything well. Once Taylor Lewan came back from that suspension and the offensive line started playing better and they started getting better blocking from the tight ends, the wide receivers, everybody on that offense can run block. And that's a big factor, and I can't wait to see it. I hope the weather's good. I hope it's not bad. I don't want to see wind and rain and snow, because if they do, Henry may get the ball 30, 35 times like some college running back.
Yeah, the expectation is, because you'd have 2 weeks to get him ready after that, so I know he's had a real run that he's been on here lately. The expectation, it's going to be like 22, 23 degrees and sunny, so cold, really cold, but no weather-related conditions other than the cold, which should, I would think, not harm in any way either of the offenses. Doesn't expect to be a really severe wind or anything like that. Okay, let's go out to San Francisco. 49ers were absolutely dominant defensively against the Vikings, and then they the Packers managed to hang on and get past Russell Wilson, who was just a wizard in that game against them. But we got Packers and we got 49ers. What do you anticipate in the NFC title game?
Packers went to Santa Clara and got humiliated in regular season. a lot of times, Clay, you see it, teams that get beat in regular season play another team in the playoffs. They got the revenge factor. That would work against the Titans, too, because they beat the Chiefs.
Right.
And I think San Francisco may be the most balanced team, has a great defense led by Richard Sherman on the back end and multiple number one picks in the front seven. And they have a multifaceted running game. Garoppolo's got a great record. And the offensive line has gotten better. Their schedule over the second half of the season was as bad as I've ever seen. They just, it's amazing they still got home field advantage. I've known Kyle Shanahan for probably 13, 15 years. I'd love to see him get a Super Bowl win. But, boy, with Aaron Rodgers, you never know. Matt LaFleur has done a tremendous job with the Packers. And I'm taking the 49ers because they're at home. But it wouldn't surprise me if Rodgers didn't go out there pull an upset, but I'm not picking it.
So you would expect Chiefs 49ers? Is that what you would anticipate for the Super Bowl?
I would anticipate Chiefs 49ers almost always go with the home team. But I think I would like to see the Titans get in there for Amy Adams, Strunk, and, you know, they're still the former Oilers, and I know a lot of the people there, but if they're not going to do it, I'm glad it's the Chiefs. I love Andy Reid. I'd like to see Patrick Mahomes in there. This may be the first of several for him. And then because of Kyle Shanahan, his staff is loaded with former Texans, I think it'd be great to see Shanahan and Mike Vrabel or Andy Reid in the Super Bowl.
I want a couple more questions here for you, larger scale NFL. What do you think happens with Brady? And I know it's a question that's not going to end for several months.
I think Tom Brady stays at New England for a 1 or 2 year contract for about $25 million.
Okay. And what about Joe Burrow? Do you expect that there will be any drama around the Bengals, or do you think the Bengals are 100% committed to Joe Burrow no matter what?
If they're not 100% committed, they should be committed. The kid just had the greatest year in history for a college quarterback. He looks ready to go for the NFL. Even the Bengals can't screw it up. I think he'll go there. One thing I would love to know, Clay, and I've tried to read everything I could leading up to the championship. Burrow grew up in Ohio. Who was his favorite team? Who did he root for? Bengals, Browns, Steelers? I want to know that, because if he didn't have a favorite team, I'd say the Bengals.
Yeah.
Fans there will love him. They're going to love him anyway. The AFC South will play the AFC North. I can't wait to see him in person. I think he's going to be great for the NFL.
You went to Baylor, are a distinguished alum of Baylor. They gave you one of those awards. Congratulations. I know we had you on to talk about it.
Thank you very much.
Matt Rhule, what do you think and how do you think he will do in the NFL?
I wish Matt Rhule the very best. He came to the worst situation in college football, won one game the first year, 7 the second, 11 this year. He wanted to coach in the NFL. We all knew it. He interviewed with Indy the first year. The Jets got offered a job, wanted to take his coaches, and they didn't want him bringing his coaches. So he went back and had a better year, got $62 million, Clay. That's almost as much as you make. And I think knowing what he did at Temple and what he did at Baylor and the kind of person he is, I think they're going to love him. I've told my friends in media there, he gets it with the media. He understands the media. He has time for the media. He's not a paranoid control freak that a lot of these head coaches, the way they treat us today. And I think he's a good coach. I love the fact that he got Joe Brady as offensive coordinator. Now they've got to decide, do they want Cam Newton? I can't imagine Kyle Allen's their franchise quarterback. Or do they want to try to get a guy like Justin Herbert from Oregon, who should be the number two quarterback behind Joe Burrow?
Outstanding stuff as always, John McClain. Go read him at the Houston Chronicle. Follow him on Twitter and enjoy what he has to say as the AFC and the NFC gets closer and closer to their title games. Appreciate it, my man.
Clay, it's my pleasure. Anytime, I'll always get up for you. Thank you.
That's John McClain.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hope all of you are having a lot of fun. My thanks to John McClain from the Houston Chronicle, who just kicked it with us. Was outstanding. We are rolling through the Thursday edition of the program. I'm out in L.A. getting ready for the AFC and the NFC championship games. Jason Martin, do you buy into the fact that there's anything to be concerned about with Andy Reid being 1-10 in his 11 games head-to-head against the Tennessee Titans, or is this just a statistical anomaly that has absolutely no cogency or relevancy for Sunday's game in the AFC title game?
I've grown less and less superstitious through the years. I think it's an amazing anomaly, but I tend to go with the side of it being an anomaly, that things have happened that just haven't worked out. They've been the Chiefs in particular play really weird football games against the Tennessee Titans. Strange things happen. I mean, the Chiefs had, what, a 98.2% chance to beat them this season and still found a way to lose because of special teams and all that. Mariota threw a touchdown pass to himself a few years ago. There's all sorts of strange happenings that go on there. I just think at some point, I'm not going to say they're due, because I think their due is loser mentality. I don't think that, I just think that that's nonsense. I look at this and I just say, and then there's the other option. Well, the Titans just have his number. I don't buy into that stuff anymore. I think that's good for cliche. Sometimes it can be good for content, whatever. But generally speaking, Andy Reid is a really good coach who has had some questionable things happen from clock management perspective and timeouts and all these kinds of things throughout his career. But I still think he can easily beat the Tennessee Titans, and I don't think he's going to walk in and say, well, I just can't beat this team. I don't feel like that's something that's on his brain.
Yeah, it's also, do you buy into Week 10 having any impact at all?
Derrick
Henry, 23 for 180-plus, any impact at all there?
No, I mean, Mahomes was not 100% in terms of how he could move, but he still threw for the most yards anybody ever has in Nissan Stadium with that 467, I believe it was.
Or 440 or whatever.
Something like that. Whatever, it was absurd.
If you're over 400, yeah, it's a big number.
It may have been 440. You might be right on that. No, I don't. It's the same thing I thought about with the Chiefs and the Texans. The Texans beat them. Did that turn out to matter? Not really. Not once we got to the postseason. I just look at Mahomes and those weapons and everything else, and I say, the Titans got by him the first time. It's going to take a lot of luck. It's going to take the same kind of stuff and some mistakes on either the sidelines for the Chiefs or on the field, some crazy happenings. I do think that the Tennessee Titans are more equipped, if they were to get that kind of lead that the Texans had, to hold on to it, whereas Houston was not. Because of the way they play football, the way that they use clock, and the way that they play defense, the way that they go bully and play physical, the Titans have basically rolled a lot of finesse teams. And I don't think that the Chiefs are as finesse as they've been in the past, but they're not, to me, as physical as either the Ravens or the Patriots. When you think of those three teams, of the three, what would you say is the most finesse? You'd say the Chiefs, because the Ravens' defense, we've known what they've been for such a long period of time, and Bill Belichick is not a finesse coach.
Yeah, and you're really getting a clash of styles here. And ultimately, I think we'll be able to see early on, you know, the Ravens talked a big game about how they were going to stop Derrick Henry, and then what happened? The first couple of runs, he's getting 3 or 4 yards. That's a good early read to me of how the Chiefs are going to do, because if you're starting off getting 3 and 4, then later in the game you're going to get 5 or 6, right? And so are the Chiefs, and you know, I mean, it would be pretty expected that the Titans are going to come out and they're going to try to establish Derrick Henry early. Are they able to hit and get the most kind of impressive thing about Derrick Henry's runs is getting over the 180s. And yes, he can break big runs, and he broke a big run against the Chiefs when they played back in November. But it's that there's very few negative yardage plays. So what's happened in this run the Titans have gotten on in these three straight weeks with Derrick Henry is they're not ever facing a 2nd and 12 or a 2nd and 13 because somebody's shooting the gap and they're losing 2 or 3 yards. Worst case scenario, it's 2nd and 8, 2nd and 7. They're falling forward for 2 or 3 yards. I think that will be a good early test, because I don't have any doubt that Patrick Mahomes is going to move the ball in the passing game. I mean, look, Lamar Jackson moved the ball in the passing game. I think the question will be, what's going to happen when they get down close? Are they able to cash in with Travis Kelce like they have been so far? And are the Titans able to continue their momentum? The Titans haven't really needed ever to kick field goals so far in the postseason. They've gotten touchdowns when they've gotten close. That's one worth monitoring.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hope all of you are having fantastic Thursdays, finishing off the show here. We haven't talked about this much, but Bobby Petrino gets the Missouri State job. Now, I want to be fair about Bobby Petrino here. Yes, that Louisville situation ended in disaster, but Bobby Petrino went and found Lamar Jackson when I'm not sure anybody else saw the talent that Lamar Jackson was bringing to bear. And he really brought him out to the masses for the first time and built a really good system around him. He also had pretty good success with Teddy Bridgewater. And offensively, Bobby Petrino has done really well for short periods of time. Now, here's the problem. When he left Arkansas, in the manner in which he did, with the bicycle accident, allegedly, with the affair, with the person on the coaching, well, on the recruitment staff, all those things, Arkansas has never recovered from Bobby Petrino leaving. Now, they had a couple of years with when you really look at it, with Brett Bielema, where they were okay. But by and large, the entire collapse of the Arkansas program can be traced directly back at the feet of Bobby Petrino. And Louisville had some good years, but they needed Scott Satterfield to come in and take over for what was a disastrous position that Bobby Petrino left that program in. I'm a little bit surprised that Petrino wants to get back as a coach. He's had a lot of success over the years. And at Missouri State, which is an FCS school, maybe it's about the purity of the sport a little bit more than it is at major FBS. But this is a guy who coached in the NFL, who's coached in major college football for a lot of his career. I'm a little bit surprised that he's back at Missouri State. When you saw this news, did it surprise you, J-Mart?
Well, I'm a Western Kentucky grad, Clay, and I covered Petrino the entire time he was there. And it was the one place where he didn't leave the place worse off.
He was only there a year.
He was there a year.
So it was hard to create that bad of a situation.
Yeah, but he left us Jeff Brohm. And Jeff Brohm won a ton of games after Bobby Petrino left. That has not been the story, where he's kind of burned it down and the culture's been kind of down and everybody's been kind of negative, and then somebody has to come in like a Satterfield into a bad situation. I mean, I just saw Missouri State, and I was just like, well, what is Petrino's end game here? Because it's not to coach Missouri State, right? I mean, that's
what
we
would think. I mean, typically he has been a guy who wants to keep climbing the coaching rankings. And that's what, look, I mean, that's why he took the Western Kentucky job after the disaster at Arkansas, because he wanted to be able to create that next opportunity for himself. And maybe that's what's going on here. But it's intriguing that he's found himself in this position and that he keeps getting chances. And the reason is because he's got a pretty fun offense and he's had a lot of success. And I'm surprised, if anything, that he doesn't get more credit for what we've seen from Lamar Jackson, because he really went and found Lamar Jackson and put him in position to succeed when a lot of people were overlooking this guy down in South Florida.
Yeah, I think there's something to that, but I also think that most people credit Lamar Jackson and then look at what happened after he left and say Petrino was riding Lamar Jackson's coattails and not really seeing that there was probably a mutually beneficial relationship there. It's no question after he left you realized how empty that cupboard actually was, but it's not like Lamar Jackson was everything on his own. It's not like Petrino and his staff didn't have something to do with the development and the maturation process that led to a Heisman Trophy for a quarterback at Louisville.
They built around him in a way that I think a lot of college coaches would not have. And that's why I think, again, you can criticize Lamar Jackson for a lot, but as an you can criticize Bobby Petrino for a lot.
Yeah.
But as an offensive coach, he brings in talent and figures out how to maximize it. The question may be, what happens when the cupboard's eventually bare? And so I would question what's going to end up happening with Missouri State as well. Although, to Missouri State's credit, we're actually talking about Missouri State.
That's the point
Which is, yeah, which is why they made the decision, right? Because otherwise, there's nobody they could have hired that we would have spent very much time talking about.
Well, there was one other place. There was one other person. Art Briles, who was the other name that was being
mentioned.
He was
rumored also to be in the mix.
Yes.
And that would be its own story, and we would certainly talk about that if Art Briles ends up getting a head coaching job again somewhere in the world of college athletics. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. I'm still out in L.A., a little bit of a zoo schedule out here. You can watch Lock It In. We'll be live in Lock It In. We're doing a bunch of skits, getting ready, a bunch of the prep and marketing for the Super Bowl, because we'll be live with both television and radio for the full week at the Super Bowl, which should be an awful lot of fun. There's a great set that's going to be set up at Loomis Park, I believe it is, where you guys can come watch the television show live if you want to get tickets. And we will also be set up in Radio Row with this show. All that's still to come. In the meantime, we'll be back tomorrow on Friday. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. AFC, NFC title talk, basically the entirety of tomorrow's show. Should be a lot of fun. Thanks for hanging out with us. I'm Clay Travis. This is Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.